Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robinhood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts. Underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
Well, thanks, Marshall. And welcome to Off Script. The Berkshires are in high cultural season, and everyone knows about theater. There's lots of it. Music, Tanglewood, the most obvious. Dance, Jacob's Pillow, of course. But what about opera? The Berkshires has that, too, and it's called Berkshire Opera Festival, now in its third season. It has two annual productions to its credit, and this summer it will be presenting the seldom-seen Don Pasquale at the Mehewi Theater in three performances between August 24th and 30th. With me today in the studio to talk about Berkshire Opera Festival and its production of Don Pasquale is one of the founders of the Berkshire Opera Festival, who was also its artistic director and its maestro. Brian Garman. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks for coming in. So there's so much culture, as I said, going on in the Berkshires, and I don't want to say that opera gets the short shrift, but people tend to focus on other stuff. So let's talk, first of all, about how Berkshire Opera Festival came around.
Well, I founded the company in 2014 with my friend and colleague, Jonathan Loy, and we had actually met 20 years ago, let's say, 20-ish years ago, and this was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. At that time, I was the resident conductor of Pittsburgh Opera, and Jonathan was a student at the University of Pittsburgh, and he was also working as an intern at the opera company. So that's how we met, and we became friends and discovered that we shared similar tastes in singers and opera, and we always kicked around the idea of we should start something of our own sometime. And so the original plan we had was, in fact, to do a Verdi festival in Pittsburgh. So we spent a lot of time putting together extremely detailed budgets, you know, figuring out how many paper clips we'd need and programming 10 years out, and did a lot of legwork for it. And for a variety of reasons, it just never materialized. But I thought to myself, after we prepared all these documents, I thought, I should save these. Mm-hmm. So fast forward to the spring of 2014, I was just returning to New York after spending a handful of years in Seattle with the opera company there. I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to do when I got back to New York. Jonathan, who's a stage director, he's on the staging staff at the Metropolitan Opera. They were negotiating the union contracts at that exact time. Things weren't going particularly well. That future was uncertain. So Jonathan called me and he said, we should revisit this idea of starting a company. So we did, and the timing seemed right. The location was sort of a no-brainer.
Why the Berkshires?
Well, as you pointed out, I mean, it is, during the summer especially, one of the most culturally rich areas of the United States. And it has Tanglewood, and it has dance, and it has some wonderful theater companies and chamber music. But it didn't have opera.
And did it ever? Wasn't there an old
Berkshire
opera?
It did. There was the Choral Festival was separate from the opera, but there was a Berkshire Opera company that went out of business in 2008. They were a victim of the recession that hit then.
But you are not affiliated with this.
We're not. Our mission is completely different. It's a different infrastructure, different people entirely. And so we thought that we saw a void and thought that we could fill it. So we gave ourselves 2 years to raise the money to cast the first show, to hire a team of designers and put together an orchestra and chorus. And then in the summer of 2016, we opened the company with Madame Butterfly.
Right. I said you did three productions, but there's been two previous productions, but your inaugural season or your inaugural effort was Madame Butterfly.
That's exactly right. So this will be number four this
great
summer.
So you did Madame Butterfly the first inaugural season, mm-hmm. and then you did
Ariadne auf Naxos,
okay.
Strauss.
Yeah. And then last year?
And then last year was Rigoletto Verdi.
Terrific. Well, we'll talk about Don Pasquale in a moment. If you've just joined it, the program is Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer, and my guest today is Brian Garman. He's the artistic director and founder of the Berkshire Opera Festival, which will be producing its annual production in August at the Mehewi for three performances, August 24th through the 30th, Don Pasquale. You mentioned that the mission of Berkshire Opera Festival was unique and different from what's come before. How so?
Well, our mission on which we founded the company it says in the statement, to entertain and enrich the lives of people of all ages and backgrounds in the Berkshires and beyond, and to do so by presenting performances of opera and sometimes things other than opera that are accessible and affordable, and to present a broad range of operas with the highest possible artistic standards. So what we were very keen to establish from the beginning is that we didn't want to be defined by a particular theater. We wanted to serve the county and the region as much as possible and as much as we could financially manage to. So we do have one main stage production, one big production every summer, and then smaller things, recitals, concerts in various venues. And we try to spread out as much as we can and as much as is financially feasible.
Right. What are the two smaller events this year?
The smaller things this year, the first one is happening on August 8th, and it's part of a new partnership that we are doing with Hancock Shaker Village, and it's called Ain't It a Pretty Night. It's a program of excerpts from American opera. Ain't It a Pretty Night is the centerpiece aria from Carlisle Floyd's landmark American opera, Susanna. And we've hired three people who are geniuses in this music to perform it, the soprano Caroline Wara, the tenor John Risen, and the pianist Lynn Baker. And that is, as I said, that's going to happen at Hancock Shaker Village in Pittsfield on August 8th. And the other one, because our season this year is sort of all based around the bel canto, which is something we'll talk about in a few minutes, on the 14th of August, which is a Wednesday night, we're doing an all bel canto concert called Savor the Sound, and that will feature the cast of Don Pasquale, along with some special guests. And this is a free concert that we do every year, and that's going to be at St. James Place in Great Barrington.
You mentioned bel canto, and I was looking at your biography on the website, which is a very nice website.
Thank you.
BerkshireOperaFestival.org. And one of the opera critics regarded you as, quote, one of the best bel canto conductors he'd ever heard. I forgot who that was, but it's the Wall Street Journal critic, Craig Sandow. Nice comment. For those who aren't familiar, what is bel canto? Why are you so good at it? And how does it figure in your selection of Don Pasquale for your major production?
Well, let's deal with the what is first.
Okay.
Bel canto is a style of Italian opera that was popular from the late 1700s into the mid-1800s. The words bel canto literally mean beautiful singing. Beyond that, there's a lot of dispute over what it actually means. It's a style of opera that has certain characteristics to it. There tends to be a lot of focus on the melodies, which spin themselves out in these long, beautiful lines. There tends to be a lot of high notes and embellishments of the vocal line, trills. And
to put this in a popular culture context, for those who were not opera aficionados, mm-hmm. give us some examples by title of what people might commonly know, don't know as a bel canto.
For example, The Elixir of Love is a famous bel canto opera. These include the comedies, too, that form what we call an opera buffa, but things like The Barber of Seville, okay. which is part of the bel canto period,
yep.
Rossini's Cinderella, Cenerentola.
Mm-hmm.
in terms of dramas, you know, one of the most famous of the Bel Canto operas is Lucia di Lammermoor mm-hmm. by Donizetti. Also Norma by mm-hmm. Bellini. Mm-hmm. So it's that's the style.
So why have you become known as a Bel Canto maestro?
I don't know if I have a great answer for that other than to
say... Don't be modest.
No, it doesn't have to do with modesty so much as it does... I can't really put into... I feel like I've always had an affinity for it. I've certainly loved this music, and I think it's made sense to me on a certain level from the first time I heard it. How good I am at it, that's, you know, for other people to decide, but I certainly do love it, and I think I understand it.
So why Don Pasquale?
Well, as I said, it's part of our mission to explore the entire operatic repertoire. We did one of the great tragedies last summer, Rigoletto. So we decided this year that we wanted to do a comedy, and we decided to focus on the Bel Canto comedies. And for me, I think Don Pasquale is the best of the lot. I think the composer, Gaetano Donizetti, in this opera really pushed the limits of the genre and the conventions of this kind of writing to their full potential. I think this is about as good as it gets for this kind of opera. The music is ingenious. The opera itself is funny. There's a real a depth and humanity to these characters that you don't always see in comedy.
Right. For those of us who are not opera aficionados, could you set up the premise of the story?
Sure. In a nutshell, there's this elderly man whose name is Pasquale, and he has a nephew named Ernesto, and Ernesto wants to marry his girlfriend Norina. Now, the problem with this, as far as Pasquale is concerned, is that Norina is not rich. So Pasquale forbids Ernesto to marry Norina. So the young lovers with their friend Dr. Malatesta concoct this elaborate scheme to get back at Pasquale, which I won't go into the details here. You can read about it on our website. And in the end, spoiler alert, the lovers are able to get married and everybody lives happily ever after.
Why not?
Why not?
Sounds good. People have a notion, okay, because we talk on this program a lot about just entertaining theater, mm-hmm. that, you know, there's a script and, you know, about 3 weeks, particularly for summer stock or summer theater up here, people assemble. They're cast sometime in the winter before the summer season, and they get together, you know, 2 or 3 weeks with very limited rehearsal and put on a play. Mm-hmm. And this is basically the format that's used by Berkshire Theater Group and Williamstown and all the rest of it. I have the notion that putting on an opera, producing an opera, is a little more complicated. Walk us through the process, if you could, about, for example, with Don Pasquale, mm-hmm. after you decided to program it this mm-hmm. summer, you've got to cast it, you've got to find the orchestra, how long does this take?
Well, it takes a long time because there are so many different components. For example, now I'm almost finished now casting for our production in 2021. So this is something that ideally I like to do a couple of years out.
So when did you start casting Don Pasquale?
About a year and a half ago.
Wow.
And once the piece is decided, then the next thing is to cast it. And sometimes, in fact, you'll choose a cast, or you'll choose a piece with a certain cast in mind, and sometimes you work in the opposite direction. There were people in these roles whom I knew that I wanted, and so then it's a matter of finding out if they're available and negotiating with their agents and the time frame and the fees and the other stuff. And it's like putting together a big jigsaw puzzle. Right, you know, this voice will work with this voice, but maybe not the other one so well. And
so, how many principal roles are there?
There are five. There are four leading roles and one supporting role. So it's as far as opera is concerned, it's a very small cast.
Right, but have these principals singers played these parts before?
Yes,
they have.
I think in every case.
Okay. Now, are you directing the piece, or are you the maestro?
I'm conducting the piece. I'm conducting the orchestra, and Jonathan is directing.
He's going to be directing.
Yeah.
Okay. So when your principal singers, right, are all familiar with their parts. They've done them before. When do they actually come together and sing them as cast?
Well, that's how we begin the rehearsal process, actually, which usually starts about 4 weeks before the show opens. Is the first day of rehearsal. And, for example, for Don Pasquale, I've set aside 4 hours on the first day for us all to get together in the rehearsal room and sing the thing from top to bottom.
Right.
And
it's like a table read.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And everyone, of course, comes to this with their own experiences and having performed the role before, and this works best in my voice, and this maybe is too slow for me to sing or too fast. And then it's the conductor's job to sort of put all that together and to have an idea of what the overall architecture of the piece is like, what the structure of the piece is like, and how it's going to flow from beginning to end. And stylistically, you know, so it sounds like everybody is speaking the same musical language.
Are the singers, they come from all over the world?
All over the world, yep.
Can you, for people who know what they're listening to in this program, could you name some of the players?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I know that they're world class and they're going to be performing right here in Great Barrington.
Yeah, we have in the title role is a bass baritone named Craig Colclough. He has made a name for himself around the world with these sort of buffo comedy roles like Don Pasquale, like Falstaff, things of that nature. He's starting to branch out now into more of the heavier Wagner roles. So what I find remarkable about him is that he sings these comic roles with this big voice, and it's very, very thrilling. He comes to us this summer after a Forza del Destino in Frankfurt and after singing Mozart's Figaro in Los Angeles. The leading lady, Norina, is the soprano Deanna Braywick. She's also having a big career in these high-flying, florid roles. She's been all over this past year, Philadelphia, Zurich, Palm Beach, the Met, in roles like Gretel in Hansel and Gretel, Adina in Elixir of Love, and we're happy to have her. The tenor Matthew Grills sings Ernesto. He's just completed a couple of years at the Bayerische Staatsoper in Munich, and he's making a name for himself now with these bel canto roles and with Mozart roles. And the young Irish-American baritone Emmett O'Hanlon is singing Dr. Malatesta, who has actually just returned from Ireland where he was singing Dr. Malatesta. So he's a graduate of the prestigious Ryan Center at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, and he sang a number of roles there as well.
And how big is the supporting cast?
Only one supporting cast member, and it's a local artist named Siddharth Dubé. He's also in the Berkshire Opera Festival Chorus, and he's singing the role of the notary.
Wonderful. In case you've just joined us, I'm your host, Dan Dwyer, and the program is Off Script. I'm talking today with Brian Garman, who's one of the founders of the Berkshire Opera Festival. It's artistic director and will be maestro for its annual major production, Don Pasquale, at the Mahewi Theater from August 24th through August 30th, four performances. These are really, really world-class productions that you're mounting right here in the Berkshires.
Thank you.
So when it comes to costumes and scenery and props and all that, where do you go?
Well, my colleague Jonathan, who's our director of production, has assembled an absolutely remarkable team of designers who have vast wealth of experience in the industry. Our costume designer who lives in South Egremont, his name is Charles Kane, for decades was one of the leading costume designers at the Metropolitan Opera.
So these are original costumes?
Starting with Rigoletto, we build all of our costumes. They're all original costumes.
Fully original productions.
That's exactly right. Right. All of the scenery is built from scratch. And another reason for that is because the stages on which we perform, whether it's the Mahewi in Great Barrington, whether it's the Colonial in Pittsfield, they're very specific.
So you have different venues. You've been at the Colonial.
That's right. We were at the Colonial the past three summers, and we'll be at the Mahewi this summer. Right. And the stages are small and of a shape that we couldn't rent a production, say, from the Met because it would, it wouldn't fit by 10 times. So we build our own sets. And largely through connections that our designers have made in the mm-hmm. industry through so many years, we are able to do these things for very reasonable prices.
Mm-hmm. It's an ambitious project you've taken on to do these world-class, okay, original productions, original costumes, original scenery, in a cultural environment that's incredibly commercially competitive. Mm-hmm. So how do you, educate people not only to opera, but also let people know that these real world-class original opera productions are really happening right here? You don't have to go to a Met Live broadcast at the Mehiwi, although I'm sure you would encourage that.
Sure.
And you don't have to go to New York to see it. It's kind of a special thing that it's happening here. How do you get people involved?
Well, one of the principles that we founded the company on was that we believe there is no substitute for experiencing the power of a live, unamplified human voice in the theater. And I see this all the time with first-time opera goers. If you have never had someone sing a high C in your direction from 10 feet away, it's really a remarkable thing. It's something you can feel physically. So I am convinced that if you can get people in the door initially, you can get people to come back. I hear this all the time, people saying, well, I don't really like opera. And
yeah.
I think 9 times out of 10, what I find that
people
they mean—
People think it's elitist.
That's right. They mean I don't like the perception of opera that I have in my mind, right? Maybe they think it's long or boring, or they're not going to understand it, or they won't feel welcome in it. And that's all a whole bunch of— can't say it on the radio. It's a bunch of baloney. So I think that education is key, because the more people know about something, the more they are going to like it. Mm-hmm. So I think going into the schools as much as possible is vital. That's something that we're trying to raise money to do more of. Doing things in the community, having, for example, these recitals that we're doing earlier in the month. Part of the reason for that is to teach people about opera and to get them interested in the main stage shows. And that's one of the reasons also why our concert on the 14th is free, and why we believe that presenting this free concert every year is so important.
You mentioned funding. We talk a lot about theater on this program, and, Broadway productions are just crazy expensive.
Yep.
But it's even getting really expensive just for the regional theaters to do stuff. I've got to believe that an opera can't cost less than a standard theatrical production in these parts. Well, how do you, and I'm not asking you to go through the details
sure.
of the budget, but how do you manage it?
Well, that's always the difficulty.
with all the arts, right?
With all the arts, of which opera is the most expensive, because it involves so many different things. You have vocal music, you have an orchestra, you have a chorus, you have dance, you have visual art, you have acting, you have poetry, you have everything. Opera combines all these things. So it costs a lot of money. And unfortunately, and we're not much different from other smaller companies in this regard, ticket sales only account for a little bit less than 20% of our total revenue that we need to put on the season, because the theaters are small. There is a finite amount of money that we can make on ticket sales. And so the rest has to be raised through philanthropic gifts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's always a real challenge.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about young people. Getting the model that I always default to is theater. And so, people, anything to put bums in the seats, a producer will do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a constant worry about what's the next generation of theater goer? What's the next generation of opera goer?
Well, this is something that for 100 years now people have been worried about. I mean, people have been saying that opera is dying for a century now, and there's no young people in the opera house, and the singers aren't as good as they were in the previous generation, and yet here we are. This is, though, part of the reason why I think it's so important that we have programs in schools to educate children about the arts and culture and opera, because again, the more you know, the more you'll like. And it's not just children. I think this goes for adults too. You know, many of your listeners may have seen the new documentary that was just released a couple of months ago about Luciano Pavarotti. And I remember in the early 90s, you know, toward the end of his career, the things that he did became extremely commercial. And when he started doing, you know, the arena concerts and the three tenors and the duets with Bono, I had colleagues who said, oh, isn't this awful? And he's selling out. And why would he do this? I think it's fantastic, because what he did was he introduced millions of people to opera who might otherwise have had no exposure to it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it takes an arena concert and a handkerchief to do that, that's fantastic. You know, what could be better than that?
We have time for, I think, one or two more questions.
Okay.
Let's get back to Don Pasquale.
Sure.
As the maestro, what is your biggest challenge in putting together a successful production of this?
I think the challenge is the same as it is with any other production, frankly. I, you know, certainly there's a different approach to style that you'd take to a bel canto piece than you would to something like Ariadne. But your basic challenge is just getting everybody on the same page and agreeing on how this goes, because there has to be essentially one musical vision of how the thing goes, and it essentially has to be the conductor's vision of how it
yours.
Goes, and that would be me. And so you cajole and you spend a lot of time sort of corralling people, but I encourage all of my casts to bring all of their experience to bear in these rehearsals. And I always tell everyone, I am nothing if not practical. And if there is something that I want that someone is not capable of doing, then we change it.
Then you may
right?
Do.
Because the point is to put on the best show possible. And especially in a bel canto opera, which is so much about the singing, you want to make everyone sound as good as they possibly can.
And we hope you will. We look forward to hearing all of that in Don Pasquale at the Mehewi Theater, produced by the Berkshire Opera Festival, August 24th through 27th. Brian Garman, thank you very much for being with us on Off Script.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. And if you want to get more information about the Berkshire Opera Festival, they have an obvious website named berkshireoperafestival.org. I want to thank my guest again, Brian Garman. And until you tune in the next time on Off Script, have a good summer. Thanks for joining us.
Underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare, collectible, and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.